Like us at Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Radio Warwickshire.
Welcome to this week's Leamington Hour Radio Show with me, Gary Jones. Now, how are you all doing today? Now, today, as I'm recording it, is Wednesday the 27th of September, and I've just been to an absolutely smashing networking meeting, and I've got a fabulous show to share with you today. So today, I've got not one, not two, but three really cool interviews to bring you. I'm going to bring you news from events in and around Leamington, and also how you can get involved with Leamington Hour over the next couple of weeks. So much to update you on and so much to tell you about. Now, each of the interviews are going to bring something different to you, and I hope you enjoy them, but please share them with your friends and family. So before we get on, let's see how you can get involved with the show. Now, if you want to get involved with the Leamington Hour Radio Show, it's dead simple. Just get in touch with me. My name's Gary Jones, and I'm available on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn as Gary Jones. Or you can check out Twitter and search me at Leamington Hour, all one word, and you'll be able to find me. Or, do you know what, just type into Google Leamington Hour. Let me know what you want to talk about. Let me know what you're passionate about. And then we can share that with our audience going forward. Now, today's first interview is going to be with the one, the only, Alan Atherton of ASA Fire Safety. I've known Alan for quite a while. He's a really good chap, and he's a fountain of knowledge, and some of his stories absolutely cracks me up. So this is part one of the interview with me and Alan, where we talk about his passions and his backgrounds.
Hey. So I am with Alan Atherton from ASA Fire Safety, and we're going to be talking about a whole manner of different things. But first of all, Alan, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Gary. Nice for you to ask me to come along today.
No, it's cool. I've been knowing you for a couple of years. And I want listeners to know a little bit more about the guy that I know. Is that right?
Yeah, great stuff.
Sweet. So let's start with just a bit about your background and history. So tell us a little bit about, well, first of all, what is ASA Fire Safety?
Well, basically, it's, daft as it may seem, it's a fire safety company, and I thought of the name quite easily because it's just my initials.
Fair enough.
And it was on top of the list of the companies they could use the name of. I thought, yes, that will do. But basically, I'm a fire safety company, and what I do, I look after workplaces, HMOs, rental properties, and just make sure that the fire safety they have in that place is correct, as it should be, to a particular governmental standard.
Brilliant.
And make life easier for the people who are working or living in those places.
Nice. And have you always been in the fire kind of industry?
No, I mean, I started off in what you'd call the work services of a cable manufacturer in Merseyside. I worked in the electrical stroke mechanical department, just basically glorified tea maker, and then I learnt from there working with electricians and draftsmen in the office, and led me into electrical wholesaling, which I was in for 10 years.
Okay.
Working for a manager electrical sort of wholesalers in the country, and from there I just picked up lots and lots of different knowledge, but particularly picked up on the fire alarm emergency lighting side, which I thought was fascinating at the time.
Yeah.
Which led me to join a fire alarm manufacturer.
Oh, okay. And how long ago was
that? Was about 1987.
Okay.
And basically, I would go out and specify fire alarms, emergency lighting systems for hotels, office blocks, corner shops, university. Did a lot of university work. And I did that for a number of years, to about 2003. And then I moved to extinguisher manufacturer. Again,
okay.
Same thing. And that's how I learned about where to put an extinguisher.
Yeah.
What type you need to use to do fire risk assessments, fire training, the whole sort of fire safety gambit, basically.
Got it.
I've been doing that now about 30 years.
Oh, wow. So for the people who, you know, have got a qualification, just come out of university, got a qualification, you've been living and breathing it for that amount of time.
Yes.
I bet you've seen some different changes in that time. That must be
the technological wise, yeah, a lot of advancements. A lot of advancements on technology and the way things are done.
So can you give me an example of how the technology has changed?
Yeah, because you're talking about when I first went to the fire alarm, it was just what would they call a two-wire system, and basically you'd have to run cables around the building and you'd have two separate sounder circuits and a separate zone circuit, and then they'd have to wire in a certain way.
Okay. Now
you've got your analog addressable, where basically you can sort of just run one big loop around the building, and every detector, every call point, every part of the system has its own little address, and if something happens, it'll flag up on the panel telling you exactly where that place is that's on fire. Same with emergency lighting, LED now, it's a lot smaller, compact.
Yeah,
it's developed an awful lot.
Yeah.
And a lot more central monitoring of them for these type of things as well.
Got you, which I'm guessing will make it more safer and much more easier to maintain.
To keep
well.
A track of as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed.
Oh, cool. Has the actual kind of equipment changed much? So the extinguisher part of it? So that's what most people see.
They've developed into much that they're more efficient than they used to be.
Okay.
Maybe a smaller extinguisher will cover a larger area than it used to be because they develop them. So that they'll make them into what they call a hydro spray or a mist that's found to be more effective than just squirting water out of a standard extinguisher.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's been a lot of changes
on
that.
Oh, nice. So during that time, there's been loads of changes in the industry. I'm guessing you were in Merseyside when you started doing this about years ago.
Yeah, indeed.
Just because that's where your electrical part was. So
No, I was based in Merseyside. Lived in St Helens, but covered all the way up to sort of Cumbria, Lancashire, Manchester, North Wales, across to Yorkshire.
Nice.
Or wherever they needed me.
We're now in Lemons and Spa. We are.
Yeah.
At the moment doing this interview. So what kind of made you come down here? Was it...
Well, it's the same old thing. It's sort of, you get to a stage where with a lot of the bigger fire safety companies, if things aren't going well, the first thing they do is say, let's retain the engineers, but we'll get rid of the salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was obviously on the sales side because I will go out and find new business. So here we go, another redundancy. What do we do? And daft as it may seem, we were living in Merseyside and we were sitting there twiddling my thumbs thinking, what do we do? And my oldest daughter rang and said, are you going to be grandparents? I thought, whoa. And they happened to live in Leamington Spa along with my other daughter.
Ah.
And that was the key to saying, right, stuff it. I've talked about this for 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
Time to do it. So we basically sold our house and we moved to this part of the world.
Nice.
And I started the business... I would say we're coming up to middle of next month, will be 3 years ago.
Yeah.
With knowing nobody and just starting from scratch and build it up to where we are today. So
we missed furniture at the start of that journey or about that, because it's got to be 2 years at least.
Yeah, yeah, I'd say so, yeah, because we arrived at about mid-September 2014. Settled in, didn't really do much until maybe the early part of 2015, I think.
Yeah. So I started doing all this around this August, September time. Yeah.
So I, so you're talking sort of, it's a, actually 3 years, I think, on about the 14th or 15th of September, my third
year in business. A couple of weeks' time then.
Yeah.
That's
and basically started from scratch.
Nice.
Not knowing a body, didn't know my way around the area or anything.
Yeah.
I just know we're away from where we were living in Bedworth to get to my daughter's in Leamington.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
So what kind of areas are you covering at the moment?
Well, basically a tying stick between 50 and 60 miles radius of this area.
Okay.
But if certain jobs come up and, you know, they're worth the travelling, I will go further afield, but I tend to stick around the West Midlands area if possible.
So West Midlands.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair play. Fair play. Well, we're going to stop it there for part one. Then when we come back, we're going to talk a bit more about the industry, some top tips, common stuff people get wrong, maybe you can fix straight away. Does that sound all right?
It does indeed.
Cool.
Thank you so much, Adam. So that was part one with me and Adam. Now, if you do want to check out some more of these interviews, then you can also check out Leamington Hour podcast, which is available on iTunes and Audio Boom. Just search Leamington Hour in there, and you'll bring up loads of really cool interviews for you to listen to. Now, let's rejoin Adam for part two of this brilliant interview.
We're back now for part two with me and Alan Atherton from ASA Fire Safety. Welcome back, Alan.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Yep.
So we've been talking in the break about loads of different stuff, but one thing that's kind of come shining through for me is you're doing it for a really good reason. Your why is really powerful. Yes. I think that stems from a big misconception in the industry.
It is, yeah, because I must admit, particularly more so when I worked for a lot of the big manufacturers of extinguishers and the way that the fact that they put a lot of time and money into their engineers, but only paying their engineers quite a small salary.
Mm.
So they have to go out and sell and sell and sell to make a decent salary. And a lot of the people would say to me, I've got a lot of extinguishers here, I don't need, why have I got to change so many every year? And a lot of the time, unfortunately, I would have to say it's maybe down to the fact that the engineer needs to make some money.
Wow. Okay.
And there was the old saying that you go into a place and find out, you know, you could have extinguishers hanging off backs of chairs because the engineer's made a couple of quid out of it. So that's something.
Hang on a second. The extinguishers were hanging at the back of chairs.
Yeah, no, that's an old joke.
Ah, okay.
Idea that you'd go in and say, you can tell the engineer's just been in and done a service. There's extinguishers hanging off backs of chairs and everything.
Oh, got you.
He made quite a lot of money out of it. So that's something that's always bugged me a bit, because as far as I'm concerned is, if you go in, you survey a place, you look at the risk, and you just give the amount of extinguishers or whatever's needed to cover that risk, and that is it.
Yeah.
And that's the way I would like to work. And for instance, if you have a service, you might get an engineer coming up to you and saying, you need three changing. And normally say, oh, okay, sign here.
Yeah.
But my thought is always say to them, you should ask the engineer, why do they need changing?
Okay.
Because going to the British standards, you should be given a reason why those extinguishers need to be changed. Is it the fact that it's got the lining's coming away from the inside? It's got a faulty, hose, it's split. There's quite a few other reasons, and I just tend to find that if I do it, the service will be done. If there's any to be replaced, I would talk to you about it before that's done and then get your permission to do it. So it's just my little bugbear. It's always have been for a number of years.
Yeah.
So that's why I decided when I did it, it wouldn't be like that.
No, that makes sense. I get that. And I think that's credible as well. And it shows your character, which is brilliant. One thing that I've completely forgot to mention in part one is that you mentioned a story to me ages ago about the Tate in Liverpool.
Oh, yes.
And you know where this is going. But I just love the listeners to kind of hear the story, if that's all right.
Because no problem.
It's a cracking little tale. I love it.
Yeah. Well, basically, we used to look after the Tate in Liverpool. We had a phone call from my boss saying, can you contact one of the curators who's got something he needs some help with? So I rang him, he said, come in, he said, can you come and do this, have a look at this situation we've got for us, yeah? So he took me into the actual one of the rooms, and I think it was the time, it was the Turner Prize, it was one of the runners-up of the Turner Prize, it was doing the tour of the country.
Okay.
And the big platform at the end of the room was a big, round, huge bale of hay.
Okay.
So I just looked at him, I said, what do you want? He said, well, Merseyside Fire Brigade have told us that we have to somehow make sure this doesn't burst into flames. You've got to make it fireproof. Oh, right, okay. Because we don't want people to come along and try and set fire to it with cigarette lighters, you know, thinking it's funny. So I thought, I'm going to do this. So I said, leave it with me. I'll come back to it at a later date. So I went away.
Yeah.
And I went through sort of all the stuff that's available to me, and I found a spray that you can spray on fabrics and various other things that will fire retard it. So I went off to a pet shop and bought some bedding, animal bedding. Took it to the yard, sprayed it with this stuff, and just sat there with a cigarette lighter trying to light it. And lo and behold, it retarded, so we had to go back. Same sort of thing again, under my arm, all my animal bedding. We went to the yard of the Tate with the fire brigade there and this guy, and we did the same thing again. And the fire brigade said, yes, and we're happy with that. You can use that. So lo and behold, we supplied them with the spray, and they just coated it. And that's how you fireproof a bale of hay, basically.
Brilliant. And how big was this bale of hay?
Well, have you ever seen the ones in the field, the really big round ones?
I don't know,
4 or 5 foot diameter. It was quite tall.
Yeah.
And it was basically an art exhibition. That's what it was, a bale of hay.
Wow.
But yeah, it's strange. Strange. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever been asked to do.
Yeah.
What? I never heard it bursting into flames, and far as I'm aware, it's mostly sitting somewhere in some museum, perhaps, or art gallery.
There you go. I just live it. Thank you for sharing that.
That's right.
So, in terms of your kind of industry, there must be loads of stuff that people think they do right, but they don't actually do right, or they only do probably 70% of the job, just because of whatever it could be, timing, staffing, knowledge, whatever it is.
Yeah, very true.
Can you give kind of some examples of
Well,
this?
I think one of the main things, and it's become more apparent recently, is fire risk assessments. The fact the law changed in 2005. Previously, the fire brigade would come in and tell you what you needed to do to make your workplace safe from fire.
Mm.
But in 2005, they brought in what they call the Regulatory Reform Order, or the Fire Safety Order, which puts the emphasis on the business owner. So they now have to do a fire risk assessment to say, yes, my workplace is safe from fire.
Yeah.
And the fire brigade now enforce that. They don't get involved in giving you tips on what you need to do.
And is that for every...
That's for everybody. So basically, you're talking about anybody... The only people it doesn't tend to apply to is if you have a serviced office, and it's including the package extinguishers and everything. But if you have rent one little office and it's you and somebody else, yes, you are responsible to do a fire risk assessment for that office, which doesn't necessarily have to be written down, but if you don't write it down, you're daft.
Yeah.
And basically, you have to say, I believe this is safe. There's two ways to do it. You can actually do it yourself and hope for the best, or you can get somebody in to do it who will basically go through the whole thing, put a package together, put a document together and say, this is what you need to do. But not forgetting, doesn't stop there. There are other things you need to do as well.
Okay.
And it's a constant ongoing of checking various things and logging them. So, yeah.
You did mention about you would write it down, or you wouldn't write it down if you're daft. You know, do you find that people don't write things down, and what could be the implications if they don't?
Well, it's very unlikely that you wouldn't write down what your fire safety is. But some people don't, because they may think, oh, that's okay, I've done that, it's all right, leave it. But then if somebody comes, a fire brigade come up and say to me, can I just see your documentation? You haven't written it down. You're going to think, what did I do last time? What did I do when I did it? So that's why it's always well to document it, because they will physically ask to see it.
Yeah.
That see your document that says...
So that's for any checks you do, any risk assessments you do, testing that you do as well?
Yeah, for instance, part of the fire safety order is if you have a fire alarm, you have to test it once a week.
Yeah.
By rotation at 10 testing call points. If you have a emergency lighting, you have to do a function test. Ideally, you should check all your escape routes are kept clear.
Yeah.
What's your fire policy, your emergency plan? Is it written down? So all these things. So if you're doing those type of tests, log them in a logbook.
Yeah.
If it's on PC or, you know, make your own file up. Because when they do come, they will have to see that as well.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was about you can buy file logbooks from Staples and those kind of bits.
Yeah, if you're ever stuck and you can't get one, give me a shout, because I'm quite happily supplying them for you.
Yeah.
They don't cost a lot of money, but it will also tell you in there what checks you need to do.
Which is probably the most important bit.
Yeah, and how often you need to do them.
Yeah. I know you work in different retail environments in the past. It was always drilled down to us that you've got to do it, and it's not even for the sake of doing it, it's to making sure that it's being done, so that one time, anything happens, you know it's safe.
Yeah, for instance, if you hadn't tested your fire alarm that week, and you've left it a couple of weeks, and funnily enough, then you come to use it, you click, and it doesn't work, and you think, that might show up if you'd tested it, right? So it's there for a reason, it's not because... Yeah. Somebody's decided, it's a good idea to get people do something they don't, you know.
Exactly. It's not exactly a paper exercise.
Because you can confirm that it will be working, it's working when you've done the test week by week. And also, it's useful for them if it flags up any faults on your fire panel, you can write them down also and report them and say, well, I've got an engineer, I've lost an engineer to come. to cover that fault. So yeah, that's the reason behind it, to be honest.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. So what is next for Alan Atherton and ASA Fire Safety?
Well, I'm trying to put something together that's going to be a little bit different, but maybe based in the Coventry area, maybe get some, like a little workshop that will be helpful to business owners. But not just for fire safety, but for any other things that may be interested to them, they need to know about, that hopefully I can get other people to join me and basically give some knowledge out to people.
Cool. Because you've done workshops in the past, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done fire training. Yeah, that's been quite good. And a couple of other things on basically the basics of fire safety yard and what you need to do. So this is going to be a similar thing, but it's been put together. So hopefully later in the year, we'll see how that comes off.
And when it is released, will that be released on social media and new website?
Yes, it will be when it does come together. It'll be on social media, Twitter, Facebook. It'll also be on the website and wherever. Basically, it'll get some coverage so people will know what's happening and hopefully they'll come along.
Brilliant. Now, at the end of every interview, we always ask our guests what their one golden nugget will be. So this is their one bit of golden advice that, you know, if you're going to tell everybody just one thing, what would yours be?
Well, I know for certain that when I started a business, you don't know till you do it that all the stuff you have to do. And as far as I'm concerned, if you don't know how to do it and you're unsure, get somebody who knows what to do it, which is things like could be accounts, social media. Don't struggle on yourself.
No.
You can work a lot of time, get somebody in, sort it out and get them to do it properly, because I've found trying to do it myself didn't work and wasted a lot of time until I got wise and decided to give it to other people who knew what they were doing.
That's it.
So I would say, yeah, that's one of the main things I would say.
I love it. Thank you very much, because it's so, so true.
It is very
so true. So if people wanted to find more information about you on social media and websites, how could they?
Okay, well, my website is www.asafiresafety.co.uk.
Nice.
If you want me on Twitter, it's at Alan Atherton 4. And basically, you can find me on LinkedIn and also on Facebook.
Brilliant. Well, cheers for the updates on fire safety, Alan. And
my pleasure, Kerry.
Take it easy. Cheers.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Alan, for that brilliant interview. Remember, check him out. He's a fountain of knowledge and he will be able to help your business. Now, just to let you know that on the 5th of October, which is a week, next Thursday, I'm going to be at the Stratford Business Show. Now, this is between 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock, and you can come along and check out seminars, exhibits, and also there'll be a networking breakfast as well. Now, if you come and visit our stand, you will be able to get my free PDF, which is a social media guide, which is my top 10 tips on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Also, I'm going to be doing two really cool prize draws, one for a networking pass for 12 months and also another one for a 1 month for my Grow Marketing subscription. So if you do want to have the free social media guide plus also a chance to have a 12-month networking pass and a 1 month social media monthly marketing subscription with myself, come and see me at the Stratford Business Show. Now, at the networking event I was at this morning, I heard Bernard Keevy speak, and I had to play this podcast to you that we recorded a while ago because it's just so good. In it, we talk about the five ways of how you can grow your business. So let's start with part one with me and Bernard. As part of this series of interviews, I'm talking to really cool business owners and people who can help you develop your business and your skill set. So I'm here with Bernard here, and we're going to be talking about how he can help small business, large businesses, grow their businesses just by real simple stuff. So thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me, Gary. I'm delighted to be here.
No, it's very cool to speak to you. So tell us a little bit about your business and about how you can help people, and then we'll go into little bits afterwards.
Okay, well, in simple terms, as I think I was explaining to you earlier, there's an awful lot of really good ideas out there. There's loads of excellent books, there's loads of people, you know, promoting good ideas, there's loads of good stuff on the internet. The problem is, if you or your listeners are like most business owners, the danger is that if you try one good idea one week and then another good idea another week and then another good idea another week, although they're all good ideas, you end up getting confused, you end up actually getting nowhere. It sort of, It's disempowering, if you like.
Yeah.
And really what you need to do is you need to have a program or a structure or a system to run on. So you need to know what to do each week in the correct order, mm-hmm. and you need to just make small improvements on a week-by-week basis following a consistent system. And if mm-hmm. you do that, then you actually end up with dramatic results at the end of the year.
Quite, yeah.
So okay. What I offer, which I think is different to... you know, to a lot of people anyway, is a system which basically says that this is what you need to do this week, this is what you need to do this week,
yep.
this is what you need to do this week. And then the challenge then is to just take some time out of your business to say, well, that's what we need to do. So now how can we apply it to our business, to my business, mm-hmm. to make it work in my business?
Yep.
And if you do that and you take the time to do it and you follow it through consistently, then you will get dramatic, progressive results.
It sounds really simple.
It is.
but what stops people? So I've got an idea by what could stop people, but what do you find stops people the most?
In my experience, a few things. The main one, I think, the biggest mm-hmm. one is that people are very busy working in their business, as the yep. cliche goes. They do what they're good at. They do what's easy, because what you're good at is easy.
Yeah, yeah.
They're reluctant to take time out of the business to actually think about, you know, promoting and moving the business forward. The argument would be, I can't afford to take the time because I'm too busy. But the point is, if you don't take the time, you'll always be too busy.
Yeah.
It's been proven that every hour you spend in planning saves 10 in trial and error and execution. So if people could just find the time to take it
yeah.
out of the business and to work on, you know, following these plans and strategies through, then they would see dramatic results.
Mm.
But in my experience, most small business owners, they're busy being busy and they don't actually find that time.
I do wonder how many people fall into that trap, because that sounds very familiar, especially to me,
yeah.
working in a retail environment.
Yeah.
You do get caught up straight away, and it's only when you actually sit back and think, well, actually, let's just calm down for a second. And that moment of reflection,
yeah.
some of your best ideas or strategies can come from there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. There's so much to this that we could go into, but obviously limited time. However, what you could say is that it's not just a question of taking time out. It's a question of diarising that time. So
okay.
say, right, so even if you said, I'm going to do an hour every morning,
yeah.
and then work out beforehand what you're going to do beforehand. So you know the day before what you're going to do in that hour. So you don't go in saying, right, here I am, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
You go in knowing what you've already decided you're going to do. You shut the door or whatever it is,
yeah.
and you don't do anything other than what you said you were going to do. And that would be an hour, say, working on your business.
Perfect. So if the first step, I suppose, is booking some time where you can do the planning.
Correct.
And then doing almost a pre-planning session to figure out
yeah.
what you're going to be
yeah.
focusing on yeah. and making the most of that
yeah.
hour.
Yeah.
Because obviously if you're busy, you want to make sure you're using your time effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore then you're planning to put what you're in there.
Yeah.
So once you're within the hour,
yeah.
what does that look like?
Well, then what it looks like is if you follow my system,
yeah.
what you'll get is you'll get a video every week, which you
okay.
can download as an MP3 if it's easier. So you can even listen to it in the car.
Okay, yeah.
You'll get what we call an e-class, which is a written lesson, if you like. I know it sounds a bit sort of like teacher. But basically, all these things do, they won't take you more than an hour a week to actually read through and to listen.
Yeah.
And then you need to just say, well, how can I actually apply it to my business?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you could use this time that you set aside each day. Probably the morning for a lot of people, you know,
yeah.
a prime time. Growth Accelerator did some research work on this, and they found
okay.
something like 70-something percent of businesses never find, you know, even 2 hours a week to work on their business. That's the
wow.
problem. And these weren't even sort of the worst of small businesses. These were businesses that were getting somewhere,
yeah.
but they weren't sort of getting as far as they could do. And even they weren't finding the time to do this. So, and, you know, it's been proven that if you can find the time, you,
yeah.
you can actually achieve an awful lot. You need
wow.
to find the time.
Yeah.
And then you need to follow a system. And the other big one is that it's no good sort of following a system and knowing what to do,
yeah.
you also need to do it. So that's again what the hour
yeah.
can be. It's how can I put this into action in my business?
Gotcha. So actually, by pre-planning and then working out the ideas,
yeah.
you can actually spend the hour on the implementation.
Correct.
So therefore, you've got a fully formed plan.
Yes.
So it all fits into place. And then
Absolutely.
You can time slot where you're going to be doing things.
Yeah.
So again, it sounds so simple.
It is. And so what's different, I think, about what I'm proposing here is that
you
won't have someone coming to see you saying, this is a good idea, why, let me explain it to you, then let's work out how it worked for you.
No.
You're already knowing what you should be doing, and therefore the challenge is, let's see how we can apply it to our business, and then maybe have what you could call an accountability partner, if you like, who says, well, you said you were going to do this, how did you get on with it? And you know yourself, if you've said you're going to do something and then someone says to you, have you actually done it? It makes you feel...
Oh, you've got to do it.
That's what works then, you see.
Yeah.
That's what works.
Cool. So you've touched upon the name of your business, but for the people who haven't caught up on it, what's your name of your business and that kind of thing? Because you've said some really good stuff, but let's link it back to...
Okay, well, it all links together, because what I'm saying is that if you follow a system... each week and you're consistent and you make small improvements each week, let's say you only make a 1% improvement a week, over the course of a year that compounds up to something like 68%. Einstein, I think it was, said that compounding is the most powerful force in the universe.
Imagine.
So that compounds up, and for a typical business that actually means you double your profits, because your overheads, you know, are more or less they don't go up at the same rate. So my business is called Exponential Growth for You, because that's what you get.
Makes sense.
Get 1% a week compounded up, which is exponential, which means you get double your profits in a year if you follow the system and if you implement it.
Brilliant. Cool. Well, I think we're going to take a little break now.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we're going to talk a bit more about your business.
Okay.
Maybe some top tips about how people can solve some issues in their business, or even just find that hour to start off with.
Yeah.
And then a bit about you. Is that okay?
That'd be great. Thanks.
Cool. Cheers. Yeah. Let's carry on with this brilliant interview between me and Bernard, all about how to grow your business. So we're back now. So I want to learn a little bit more about the person behind the business, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So how did you start, how did you get into it, and how did you find it to start off with?
Well, by a sort of a long meandering route, I suppose.
Okay.
Basically, I spent a couple of years in accountancy when I left university.
Sure.
And then I spent 12 years as a higher education senior lecturer, effectively. I was in charge of business and management studies in a few colleges. And I used to cover things like, you know, accountancy, finance, marketing, economics, all the sort of things that, you know, are business disciplines, if you like.
Yeah.
I then spent 20 years as what's called a senior pension specialist with a company called Clerical Medical.
Okay.
And that involves talking to financial advisors and giving them ideas for selling investments and pensions related to tax planning, basically.
Okay.
And that took me up to about 9 years ago, and I think it was about 9 years ago, it might be a bit less. It's about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
There was a big, on the financial crisis, Lloyds took HBOS over. I don't know if you remember that. The government sort of backed it, and Scottish Widows took Clerical Medical over, and it was a huge reorganisation. And we had the option to either apply for a new job in the new setup or tick a box to be paid off.
Okay.
And so I ticked my box and they paid me off and they gave me some money, which was very nice, cleared the mortgage. And I set up on my own at that stage.
Mm.
And so what I've done since really is I've worked at sort of developing this business alongside, I still do financial services exam training for financial advisors. It's a sort of a sideline, if you like, but it keeps my hand in terms of those disciplines.
Yeah.
So really, I built this up based on my background, and also the fact that when I was at Clerical in particular, it was a sort of specialism I had in sales meetings, and that I used to cover things like goal setting and motivation. So
you're already doing it.
I've always been interested in this sort of material, and I mean, I read about it and I listen to tapes. I just love the sort of ideas of self development and of developing a business, and you know, as I say, if most people take the time to think about what they're doing, and if they know what they should be doing in the right order and actually do it, then, you know, these things are achievable.
Yeah.
Where most people probably go wrong is those things don't happen. I think that's the issue for a lot of
people. I think, they don't happen. There's no accountability. They haven't got the time to do it.
Time.
Well, you've just touched upon a point, which it's probably a conversation for another day.
Okay.
But in terms of self-development, do you think there's a link between self-development as well as then growing your business?
Oh, well, I think they're both related.
Yeah.
I really do. I think having a positive mindset, having goals, having strategies in place to achieve your goals, knowing what your personal goals are, what your business goals are, they're very much related, particularly for small businesses. Obviously, for corporate businesses, it's different, maybe. But for small businesses,
for small businesses, they are the brand. They are the person behind
the owner and the business. they're the same thing, really, just in different parts of their lives, aren't they? So I think they're very much related, yeah, absolutely.
So would you touch upon the self-development side of it as well, potentially, in the strategy going forward?
I do.
Or would you focus on the businesses?
Well, I cover things like goal setting,
okay,
time management. So these are self-development issues.
Yeah.
Sales skills. Been reading some fascinating stuff about, you know, sales skills and different sales models, and the fact that the traditional approaches to selling don't really work anymore, particularly in this day and age, and that alternative methods work better. That's, again, a huge area.
Yeah.
I think the whole area is related, to be absolutely honest.
I always find that when I have breakthroughs with a business, it's always when I've got a breakthrough with self-development. You know, it could be listening to podcasts, it could be watching TED Talks, or whatever the medium it is, just triggers something in my mind that I think, I could apply that, and then suddenly, once I thought I need to apply that, or I could, it's a case of, okay, well, how can I put it in? What can I do? When can I... So it's potentially, for me, I get it. I get it.
I've just finished a book, reading a book called, it's an old classic, it's probably the classic, called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. It's absolutely fantastic, but, you know, the themes are still there all through, you know, all through the ages, I suppose, that, you know, the two are related. The way you think and the way you approach things will reflect in the way you operate your business, really, I think.
Is there any kind of other books that you'd recommend, or any other podcasts you'd recommend?
Well, loads. Brian Tracy. Read anything written by Brian Tracy, in my opinion. The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy.
Okay.
He's brilliant. The E-Myth by Gerber, I think his name, William Gerber.
Yeah, Gerber.
Book. I'm just reading a book by David Sandler. The Sandler, it's called... You can't teach a kid to ride a bike at a seminar.
This
his approach to selling is totally different to most other approaches.
Yeah.
And he refers to something I read years ago about transactional analysis, which actually makes a lot of sense.
Transactional analysis?
Yeah, there's loads of good... There's so much good stuff out there. Yeah. So much good stuff. Yeah.
No, that's cool. So that's brilliant. And obviously what I'll do is, for people who are listening on the show, if you haven't taken notes, that's fine. I'll include those in the show notes.
Yeah,
so I'll include links to the Amazon or wherever it is.
I'm quite happy to put a bibliography together if people are interested.
No, it's fine. I think it's really, the issue I've got with not self-development or business kind of books, there's just so many out there.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just needs someone to say, do you know what, this is a really good book, or this is a podcast you need to listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're in tune with that person, you'll go, well, actually... Yeah.
Yeah,
I would like to do that. So it would be good. Yeah.
Okay. Actually, I've just thought of the best one I've read recently.
Okay.
It's even better. Well, not better than all those, but which was totally different. It's called Influence, The Science of Persuasion by Robert Cialdini, I think it is. Cialdini.
Oh, okay.
And that's absolutely fantastic.
Okay. Yep. Any kind of sneak peeks of that? Or?
Yeah, well, it talks about psychology of why people buy.
Yeah.
And it talks about reciprocity, which is what all of our networking, we all go networking, that's how we met, isn't it, Gary?
So exactly,
reciprocity is all about, you go networking and you do someone else a favour by buying off them or recommending a person to them or giving a testimonial to them, and then they feel as if they want to respond to you, and it's a very powerful force. But you know, this book of his covers loads of stuff like that. Really, really, really good book.
So let's check
it out.
Can't
recommend it highly enough.
No, fair enough. That's a good tip.
Yeah, yeah.
Going on to another kind of top tip. One thing I ask everybody who comes onto the show is, if you're going to recommend or give someone one golden nugget, one top tip that's going to help them or their business, what would yours be?
Right. Can I give more than one? If not, yes, it's time management.
Time management.
Yeah,
okay.
I would say, going back to what we said earlier, find the time, at least, I would think... Ideally, at least an hour a day.
Yeah.
Find the time to say, right, in that hour, I'm going to work on developing my business and on implementing all the ideas that I want to implement in the business.
Yeah.
And, you know, just take that time out to do it, because it'll actually save you time in the end.
Yeah. No, I, as a golden nugget, I like that a lot. There's obviously loads more we can cover.
Yep.
And we could probably have another couple of interviews like this.
Yes.
And it'll be really cool to do that.
Yeah.
How could people get in contact with you if they want to learn more about you, your business, and then just talk to you just in general?
Well, they can go to my website, which is www.exponentialgrowth4u, and the four is a number and the U is a letter. Yeah, the letter U, .com.
Mm-hmm.
I've also got a website called www.financiallyfreeforlife,
okay,
and again it's a number four, financiallyfreeforlife, that's a .co.uk. So either of those, really. Cool. And I've got an email address. The best email address is probably info@exponentialgrowth4u4again, .com.
Cool. And I know you're on LinkedIn as
I'm
well.
I'm on LinkedIn, yeah.
Brilliant.
And, obviously, you know, other contact information.
No, that is absolutely grand. Anything else you just want to leave with the listeners?
Well, if people want to know how the system works, the system concentrates on the five major levers for growing a business. And the five major levers are number of leads you generate, the percentage you convert, the number of times each person converted buys off you in a year, the average price they pay when they buy, and the profit margin you make on whatever you sell to them. And all of our system and the strategies reflect one of those five areas.
Gotcha.
And so if there's five areas and you do a 1% improvement a week, you end up making a 10% improvement in each of those five areas. Mm-hmm. But compounded up, it comes to more than that.
Yeah.
And that's how you double your profits. And what you need to do is focus on those five key areas and have strategies in place to actually achieve those improvements. It can be done. It's just a question of doing it.
Just doing it. Mm. Just getting it done.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed that.
Thank you, Gary.
Hey, cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bernard. It was really good to catch up with you today. And he is actually holding a workshop next week on a Tuesday, I believe. So come and check out him on LinkedIn. Bernard Keevy is his name. And hey, growing profits is his game. Now, I just wanted to say thank you very much to Bernard and also Alan so far for two really cool interviews. Now, I'm going to crack on with the next interview with Joe Wilson, who is just an inspirational lady, and what she's doing in Leamington is absolutely amazing. So this is part one with me and Joe. Hello, everyone. So we are here in a car, in a car park, recording a podcast, which is a first for the Leamington Hour podcast. But thank you very much, Joe, for being a very gracious guest at this lovely venue. That's absolutely fine. You don't have to worry about that. I'm here with Joe Wilson from Swimworks. Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Hi. Hi, Gary. Thanks.
That's all right. And we're going to be talking about a little bit about your history, a bit about your background, and also, more importantly, what's coming up, because you've got some amazing stuff happening.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
You have. So, just for people who don't know you, just introduce yourself and tell people a little bit about what you're doing at the moment.
Yeah, sure. I am launching a new swim centre in Leamington called Swimworks, and it's a swim centre that offers swim lessons for the whole family. It's purpose-built, and it's on Queensway, just up from McDonald's and Aldi.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And in terms of what Swimworks is going to do, tell us a little bit about it before we get into your background.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's sort of breaking the mould, because at the moment, you know, you have leisure centres and they're great. And I know that they've just had a refurb in the area, which is fantastic. We're all for promoting swimming and family swimming. But we're so different from the leisure centre. We offer very small group lessons in a very controlled environment that's very quiet. It's very clean. All the facilities are purpose-built for families. Mm-hmm. The pool is really, really warm. And also, one of our USPs is it's virtually chemically free.
Oh, wow.
Which, yeah, it takes an awful lot for that to happen as well. We've got huge different filtration systems and chemical systems that we put in place, and we have lots and lots of hygiene controls.
Mm-hmm.
But that means we're offering to a market that, and to swimmers that maybe they have sensitivities or allergies. And this is our second swim centre. We're currently running Swimworks in Rugby, which has been a great success.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found there is that the centre offers lessons and people can go there and swim that, you know, can't swim in other places because of the chlorine levels.
Yeah.
So many people come to the centre and say, wow, you know, this is so great for me and my child and my skin.
They must feel amazing afterwards, especially if they've come to other places and had
reactions. That's right. So, yeah, and that's one of the reasons we're so passionate about the cleanliness and the hygiene of the centre. So we can't wait to open in Leamington. It's going to be so fantastic.
Perfect. So how did you get into all this?
Oh, goodness me. Well, it has been a bit of a journey over the last 12 years, definitely.
Weren't you in corporate life at one point in time?
Yeah, I was. My background is actually, well, very, very quickly, going back to joining the dots backward, it's funny, isn't it? When you really look backwards and you think, God, my degree in Bournemouth University was actually in leisure marketing.
Funny that, okay.
Yeah, I know, and that's really strange because, like, when I came out of university, I went into retail marketing.
Okay.
And, I was in retail marketing for about 15 years, and I was sort of in retail operations, open stores, X, Y, Z. I had a great job, and I really loved it, and it took me, like, into an international marketing level. But the cheeky monkeys, they made me redundant when I was on maternity leave with my second child.
Wow.
Yeah, I was actually quite upset. Yeah. The honest truth is, I trained my assistant too well.
Okay.
Yeah, and also their excuse was they were not opening the amount of stores and their strategy as they originally thought, but they were really naughty because it was only me in the office that was being made redundant as well.
Wow. So that was massive turning point in your life.
Yeah, it was. And I'm not going to deny, I was absolutely devastated. For a whole year, I walked around in a little bit of a bubble of thinking, well, what am I going to do? You know, I put my heart and soul. In actual fact, I relocated for that job from Solihull up to Market Harborough.
Mm-hmm.
I relocated my whole family for that job as well. And I was headhunted for it. I'd worked for them for over 8 years. So I was really, really cross at the time.
You're bound to, and the thing is, that's going to, during that time, I'm guessing you reassessed a lot of what you were doing.
Yeah, I really thought about, well, what do I want to do? In actual fact, it gave me that space, that headspace of like thinking, well, you know, what am I good at? You know, I started to market and use my skills for local businesses and just almost like help out lots and lots of people, and I literally stumbled across baby swimming because I was already taking my son to a local swim group, and I absolutely fell in love with it because my background as a child was a sort of a competitive swimmer. So again, looking back, all these skills,
it's all joining up the dots again.
I know, it's like amazing looking back, you know. And I love family swimming as a child as well, so I had this passion and love for the water. And I was helping market this local swim school in sort of Northampton Kettering way. Mm-hmm. And it was like an instant love. I thought, well, do you know what? I could actually do this because she was training me up to be like a pool assistant. I thought, hey, no, actually, I want to be teaching, you know?
Yeah.
I want to be doing this. And I was marketing her business. And I thought, and I was really honest and open. I said, you know what? I really want to do it. And I lived in Market Harbour. And I thought, well, Coventry's not going to affect you. You're doing it in Northampton.
Mm-hmm.
It might take me an hour to get to Coventry, but I'm dead set. You know, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
So I started a business called Little Splashers 12 years ago in Coventry. And literally that was the turning point for me.
Wow. So Little Splashers set up 12 years ago. You're driving towards your passion and you're working towards what you love doing.
Yeah.
So I bet it didn't feel like work during it at all.
No.
A lot of hard work, but...
Yeah. Those late hours, those, you know, constant work. And the great thing is, my family were really small at the time as well. So when I originally set up the business, I was doing everything around the family.
Yeah.
I'd literally go to the pool, teach for 3 hours, get home, do some admin, only work a few days a week. The children were, you know, babies, toddlers at home. So I had that really, really good, perfect work-life balance. It was only when it got sort of a bit busy that I thought, hang on a minute, I need some extra help.
Yeah. So in that case, when you got to that point, because that's a great way to be. It's great to see the business thriving, and especially the work-life balance.
Yeah.
Because that could be one of the first things that stops you from taking your business to the next level.
Yeah.
But
I think it was
before we had you had a lot of support, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. My husband's in it as well, and he's a fellow director, and he saw the potential in the business, but also he saw me struggling and said, hey Joe, you need some help, you need some admin support. Rather than go outside, I could really help you.
Yeah.
And funny enough, he was like a tri coach and he was into sport and swimming, and he's done like Ironman competitions and things like that. And he was a swim coach for his tri, so it was quite a nice parallel.
So we
had a partnership at the time, and he saw the potential and helped grow the business, Little Splashers.
I just love the fact that you had the support from everyone.
Yeah.
And because you had the support and you had the drive, marrying them two up, it was going to work.
Yeah, there's not many people that can work with their husband as well as we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we try not to talk too much shop at home, but we literally live and breathe swimming.
Yeah, I can imagine. Especially if you've got passions outside of
your definitely.
Business involving swimming, it's going to cross over.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to stop it there just for now.
Yeah.
And then when we come back, we're going to be talking about Leamington, about the new venture, and about the future for Joe, Little Splashers, Swimworks.
Perfect.
Everything like that. Is that all right?
Great.
Cool. Let's go cracking with this brilliant interview with me and Joe for part two. We are back for part two. So, 9th of October is when it's all going to be kicking off. The new centre in Leamington Spa, but it hasn't been an easy trip. You've been telling me a little bit about the background in getting to the stage, and it's crazy the loops and jumps that you've had to kind of go through.
It's such red tape trying to find an industrial unit and change it to leisure.
Yeah.
It's actually almost impossible. So impossible that when we found the property that we really, really wanted to convert in Leamington, which used to be an old joinery centre,
mm-hmm.
we approached the council and literally they were like flat, almost like, no, you can't do it. So we looked at a planning consultant and we spoke to them, and they were like, no, the council, unfortunately, Leamington and Warwick don't like change of use on into industrial to planet, into leisure. And we thought, well, how are we going to do it then? You know, we've really, really... So we looked at all the different planning points, and we put our case. It was a massive process, and we put a lot of money and support behind just to get change of use. It actually took 6 months to change of use.
Wow.
And the landlord as well really, really stood by us, which was incredible.
Brilliant.
Because, you know, to have a landlord that would do that is fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, so 6 months of really hard graft just to change the use, just to make it possible to be able to use.
Constantly you were throwing money at the planning process. You had to produce so many different reports as well, highway reports, and prove all your points.
Yeah.
And the money was stacking up constantly. And you don't know at the end of it whether or not the council will say yes or not. Yeah, it was crazy.
It's crazy. So you went through that process, and that took 6 months to do. Even before building and getting all the stuff sorted in it. So how, from that initial process, how long has it taken? How long has it taken to get to the stage now where you're thinking, in 6 weeks' time, it's going to work?
Yeah, well, the funny thing is that the actual build process is quite quick.
Yeah.
And we're 6 weeks away, and I go in there at the moment, and I think, goodness, how are they going to do it? But they put things really quick, you know. It's a whole team, and the great thing is about what we're doing is it's all specialised, and we have the best team. We've done it before in Swimworks Rugby, we know what we're doing, and we're putting in some great facilities for the local people.
Brilliant, because you were saying about earlier on in part one about the filtration system, being really, the one thing that kind of shines out is it's family, it's a community, and that's the brilliant thing about it.
Yeah, we teach from 6 to 8 week babies. And we have them as little babies, our preschool program, and then they continue with us in our after-school program. And then perhaps, like, the mum or dad can't swim very well, so all they want is just to improve their stroke, so they come to us. We have lots of grandparents, aunties, uncles. It's amazing because we offer swimming to everybody, the whole family. And we're very, very much a family swim centre. Our whole values, it's like a little joining little community when you join Swimworks.
It's lovely. It's good to hear.
Yeah.
It's actually really refreshing to hear as well.
Yeah.
Because you can tell, talking to you, you're passionate, your face is shining, it's beaming.
Thank you.
It's great.
And that's what the staff feel as well.
Mm.
The people that we recruit, I'm not saying that we're picky, but, you know, they have to feel it as well.
Yeah, I'm sure they've got to match up to the brand values. They've got to believe in your passion as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They have to be that special type of person to come and work for us. Their passion shines through their teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that we constantly strive for and make sure that our team feel valued, they know they're valued, and their passion is coming through the lessons as well.
Brilliant. And how many people are you going to have in your team?
Goodness. Because a lot of the positions are part-time, and the fantastic thing is we offer a lot of, you know, for mums returning to work or for young people or for, you know, it's great. We've got so many lovely positions. So it's about 15 at the moment that we've recruited.
Yeah.
We're currently on the hunt for a young apprentice, and it's something that we nurture, you know, our staff, and we train them up from scratch to become part of the Swimworks team.
Brilliant. So there's 15 positions already filled.
Yeah.
Another few waiting to
come.
Yeah,
yeah. As demand grows, we will look for those special people.
Brilliant. And when we're talking about the kind of community and values, you've always said about loads of people kind of coming into it from all different ages. Are you going to be offering different classes? Something we haven't really spoken about.
No.
What kind of services are you going to be offering during the new period?
Sure. Well, Swimworks is a centre that you can't just turn up and swim for public swimming. That's like the leisure centre. Mm-hmm. So it's swimming courses. We improve people's swimming.
Yep.
So we start with our preschool programme, which is for babies and toddlers until they go to school. Then we have a very, very strong after-school programme, and we're so passionate in after-school swimming, and we provide the lessons that are called fast track. So we only have one small group in the pool with two teachers, very, very different from a leisure centre environment. Mm. Not that there's anything wrong, but this is how we do it.
Yep.
And then we have an adult programme, we have AquaFit, we have adult beginners and improvers, and we've had a lady in the pool that was like 89, never swum before, had a fear her whole life, and we got her swimming.
Brilliant.
So when I say it's from babies to you know, the higher limit, you know, it's like 0 to 99.
Yeah.
It's the whole family.
It is, especially with what you're offering for people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and actually, very quickly, I forgot to mention, which is really, really good, pregnancy. We have so many classes that are prenatal. In the water, we have a huge aquanatal program as well.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So it's quite specialist. Go. Very specialist.
Yeah. And can you, I'm guessing the website will have all the details of all the workshops and the classes.
Yeah, that's right. We are booking everybody in at the moment at swimworks.co.uk. Mm-hmm. We have spaces if people do want to join us. And we have an open booking system, which is great. So people can book online. Brilliant. Or they can get into contact with us. So we're opening on the 9th of October, and we're currently promoting and booking people in now.
Brilliant. Well, it's going to be an exciting time.
Mm-hmm.
Properly exciting time. And we're going to do a follow-up interview probably start of October.
Oh, that'd be fantastic if you came down.
Yeah,
I want you to actually come and see the centre, because you'll get the actual feel. As soon as you walk through the door, our brand message, our brand voice and our brand values will really shine through.
Brilliant. And are you on social media so people can check your updates on Facebook, Twitter?
Yeah, I'm putting things on Facebook all the time. We do have a Twitter account, and people sort of, you know, would be lovely to connect with people.
Brilliant. Is that just as Swimworks on those platforms?
Twitter is, Twitter is Swimworks Limited, and Facebook, Swimworks. Easy to find.
Brilliant, Jo. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gary.
Let's catch up again in October. It's exciting.
Thank you. Yeah.
Cheers.
Thank you very much, Jo. What a great interview. And as I said to you at the start of it, I think Jo's really inspirational because she actually has gone through so many hurdles. She's had so many lumps in the road that actually she hasn't worried about. She's just got on with it. And I take my hat off to her. Remember, it opens on the 9th of October. So if you do want to check out social media between now and then, and we'll update you later on about it. Now, at this point, I want to say thank you very much for all of our guests. So thank you very much, Alan, Bernard and Joe, for three really good interviews. Just to let you know also, Leamington Business Awards tickets are now open. So if you're free for a really cool night on the 10th of November, come on down, go check online, book in. We have social media surgery, which is going to be starting on Radio Wiltshire at 10 o'clock every Monday, which is where I give you my top tips on social media. So check that out on a Monday between 10 and 10:30. Now you can listen to all of these shows on Audio Boom. Just search Radio Warwickshire for more information. Have a great time, everyone, and I hope you really have a good one. Listen to the other shows on Radio Warwickshire.
and take care.
Like us at Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Radio Warwickshire. Like us at Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Radio Warwickshire.